Go for the porno, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Steve Page, Justin Tyler, and Alex Nelson. Hey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man of the booth band. And guys, we want to take a little time to tell you about a place called Simple Studios that's opening up. How much time? We have like an hour for the show.
Yeah.
There's some great features there, so we're really going to hit all of them.
What I love about the rooms is you can do anything in them. It's great.
That's great.
Flexibility.
Yeah, so guys, exciting week for Pete.
Yeah.
Pete, you want to tell them why?
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting because...
I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan, and I've been trying to get these guys to talk about G.I. Joe a little
There's
bit
an,
more.
There's an audible groan from the audience.
That's all right.
For months now, Pete has been asking us, please, can we talk about G.I. Joe on the show?
And he's like, no, it's not even, we're not even close yet.
We're not even close. So it's the week of G.I. Joe, so hit it, Pete.
All right, so...
Guys, we have a great show for you. I'm really excited about the guests we have here. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Irvine!
Remember this thing?
We got the old couch out tonight.
Oh, that's great.
Nobody remembers. Am I sitting on the new one?
The old one.
Newish. New one.
Fresh.
It's the old one.
Fresh couch, yeah.
Yeah. It's not even, it's just chewing gum.
That's the one with the crotch bugs in it.
Sweet. I knew I came to New York for a reason.
So thank you so much for coming on and doing the show. Let's talk about Daredevil Noir.
Okay.
Cool.
What should we say?
Nothing in particular, just it's a book. So Daredevil Noir, first of all, tell us how you got hooked up with this, how you ended up writing this title.
Well, after I did, the first comic I did for Marvel was sort of max reboot of Hellstorm, Damon Hellstorm, Son of Satan. And so Axel Lons and I were talking about some other things after that, what do we do next? And we got to talking about Daredevil one day. And we had this sort of long and meandering conversation about Daredevil, and so we got ourselves interested in this thing. And then he came back to me a few months later and said, well, there's this noir thing. Can you make it a noir story? And I said, you bet I can. And so that's what I did.
You just had a bunch of cigarettes.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you know, there's some jerks, real jerks on the internet who put up stupid blog posts on their stupid blog, being like, Daredevil Noir, isn't that really repetitive? It was me, by the way.
I saw it. Okay.
I
read it and I liked it. So my question is, how was that a concern of yours going in, that Daredevil, by its very necessity, is Noir?
Well, yeah, but, I mean... There's a couple of ways to approach that. You can think, why would anybody tell a noir Daredevil story? You know, because the character is already noir. What I wanted to do was actually strip it back and take the chance to put the noir story in the noir story's natural environment, which is Prohibition era, some deep, dark, grindy city, and which happened to be New York in this case. So the historical elements of the noir, I think, are really important to the way it works. And then this also let me do some, I think, sort of interesting things with Matt's character and a different origin for him, because obviously he's not going to be a blind lawyer in 1929. The classic noir story is always about a guy who's just a little bit better than the world wants him to be, and so he's always fighting that fight to continue to be a little bit better than the world wants him to be, while the institutions of state and whatever else are trying to drag him down. So I thought that the historical framework was an interesting way to get at that, and to get at that maybe in a little bit different way than Miller had done it, or Brubaker had done it, or
Zelda.
Yeah, for God's sake.
Having said that, I don't blame people if they were skeptical about it from the beginning, because I mean, if I had not known what was in my head, and somebody had told me that there was going to be a Daredevil Noir comic, I would have said, well, you know, this is Coles to Newcastle here, or something like that.
Yeah, Zalvin. Yeah.
No, thought got taken down.
No, he was being upping you that time.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to tell if he's mocking you or upping you.
Yeah, I can't read your emotions at all.
He's a ghost. Yeah. He's
if
a
I could read your mind.
Guys,
guys, not, hurt. I think I'm getting something.
Not here. Not now, guys.
Would you want to revisit Noir with another character, with the same character?
Oh, yeah, dude. Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I have a killer Doctor Strange story.
No, the Noir line's been doing pretty well. It's going forward.
From what I hear, yeah. I don't hear much about stuff like that, and if I ask, they get all confused.
Don't tell them anything.
Yeah, but the truth is that I try not to get too hung up on, I mean, if a book goes out and sells a zillion copies, I'll be thrilled, I'm expecting that won't happen, so mostly what I do is write the book and send it off into the world and hope people like it, and then go and do another one. But yeah, I actually have another Daredevil Noir story that's rattling around the back of my head, which I think would be cool to take a swing at one of these times, and maybe he'll do some covers for it.
Nice.
You guys know that Dennis Calero over there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. I
thought you just pointed, like, that's how you picked who did covers. Like, he's doing my next cover.
Okay. I have to take a drawing class.
Should I just get off my stage and go, did someone say a perfect game?
Yeah. Wow, man, this happens never.
let's move on to talk about, you also have a novel.
Yeah, I wrote a novel called Bob.
Just briefly.
What is this now?
Come on, just for 1 second. They don't have pictures.
The cover will have a picture. Probably.
The cover has a big picture.
See? That's fine.
We will read the cover and then we're done.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, the back cover has a picture on it.
Oh, he's got us.
I'm going to read right around the spine. The spine's got at least four words.
I'm going to read right around the spine. All the way around to the back.
Man, that was a great look.
So other than the cover, the back cover, the spine, what's inside of the book?
It's a whole heap of words. If read in sequence, we'll tell you a story.
I never got to believe before that.
That's how they work.
If someone would just sat me down and explained it to me.
If only I'd known.
I always just randomly flip through and listen for words. Rarely works.
Yeah. Finnegan's Wake is the book for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should try that. It's about this. The basic gag of the book, if you can call it that, is that there's this company that owns a bunch of prisons, private prisons, all right, and they also insure the prisons. And it occurs to them one day that it's a whole lot more expensive to insure older prisoners than it is younger prisoners, because older prisoners sue everybody all the time, and they get sick, and all these kind of things. So they think, well, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we only had young prisoners? And so then they concoct a scheme whereby they figure out how much money they have to keep in reserve against future expenses to have these prisoners and satisfy federal regulators. And it's millions of dollars, because I bounced the book 30 years into the future now. It was 40 when I originally thought of it. Prison costs are through the roof, et cetera. Okay, so they go to the prisoner and they say, Mr. Smith, you committed your murder at the actuarial average age of 27 years old. You'll live 60 years in prison. Okay? Over the 60 years, we're going to have to spend, $11 trillion on you. What if we took a piece of this $11 trillion, handed it to you, and said, you can give this to whoever you want. You can give it to the Little Sisters of the Poor. You can give it to Greenpeace. You can give it to the Klan. We don't care. You can give it to whoever you want. Tomorrow morning, in exchange, you take the needle.
Wow. Oh.
And so I thought about this for a long time, and I various ways of doing it. And of course, this would be, it would really deform the criminal justice system as we know it. And of course, there'd be kickback schemes and all sorts of corruption, which is kind of what the book gets into. But then I was worried. I was worried that, what if prisoners really wouldn't want to do this? This is a crazy idea. Who wouldn't want to just live rather than die? And then I ran across an article in Harper's about how something like 40% of the inmates serving life terms in all over Italy had signed a letter to the premier asking to be put to death rather than continue serving life without parole.
Italian prisons, though.
Yeah. Bad news. Rikers has got nothing.
Real sweaty prison. Yeah. Hot weather, Mediterranean air.
Yeah, it'd be bad news. So maybe I should have written the book in Italian. But I didn't. Yeah.
That's all right.
No, I'm really disappointed.
There's not a huge market over there.
Yeah, I would have bought the book in Italian. That would have been a copy. All right.
Anybody know Italian? Want to
pizza. Last little thing I'm going to ask you about. Very important. I'm going to hijack the show for a little bit, you guys.
Oh, how's that different from usual?
Slam.
Thank you, Mitchell, for the TV
yeah, show.
Tuna Mitchell.
Yeah. How'd you get hooked up with that? I'm a big fan of the show.
It actually happened because I wrote a Batman novel, and that was fun. And so then the guy who I was working with at DC License Publishing for the Batman book called me up one day and he said, "Well, we just got all the licenses to Supernatural stuff, and so we're talking about doing this like compendium of the show's folklore." And I said, "All right, I'll do it." And and so I started working on it and got bored. So and so then what I did was I figured out that if I could interest myself by appropriating the voices of the characters and having this be sort of they take on the sort of raconteurs demeanor, you know, just like guiding everybody through. Well, you know, once we ran into a Wendigo, and here's how it happened. And did you know that the Wendigo, the last living Wendigo hunter, died in 1922? And so that got me reinterested in the book. And then I just went off on this tear. There's all these appendixes about demons and herbs and all kinds of things. And then because that book did really well for them, apparently, they asked me if you don't watch Supernatural, then. It's about these two brothers whose mother was killed by a demon, and they're off trying to find this demon, and then they kill any other supernatural thing they find in between. And now Angels got involved last year, and then the stakes get higher.
That was a surprise.
Well, sense. No, they shied away from Angels for a long time.
Yeah.
You're right.
Come on.
But so,
great show. Shut up.
Yeah, the show's a lot of fun, I think, and so the boys are always consulting their dad's journal because it's full of all this arcane knowledge and whatnot. And so then they came back to me after I wrote the monster book and asked me if I wanted to write the journal. So that was cool. And so I went and just turned myself into a crazy ex-marine whose wife had been killed by a strange demon, and wrote 22 years worth of journal entries about it.
And wow. That's gonna be actors at all.
No, I met a bunch of other people.
Where's this line of questioning going?
Well, okay.
Where's
this line of questioning going? Cut to the last question. Are they dreamy?
They're tall and handsome. And I was at the Comic-Con last year when Jared Padalecki walked into the room, into this giant panel room where they were having a Supernatural panel. And it was like being in a Beatles concert.
Yeah.
Everybody just...
Yeah, that's what I had to catch Alex, actually, and I think we were at that panel.
Oh, man, it was amazing. I still have a little piece of his shirt.
Yeah.
That was you?
Yeah.
Oh,
that was me.
Oh,
I had much longer hair than
he's going to
bigger boobs.
Tomorrow morning.
I was real confused.
He's going to go to Italian prison tomorrow with a face.
Kill me out.
Yeah.
Guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack. First thing we are going to talk about is Ultimatum, number 5, bringing the Ultimate Universe to a close for about a month. What did you guys think about this?
Man, it looked great.
I don't know.
Jeff Loeb likes to have right action in this stuff, you know, and he likes to, wouldn't it be cool if Cyclops really, you know, just let loose with his visor beam and really kind of, you know.
Just fucking fried everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
just kind of went crazy. Yeah. And that's what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure did.
I don't know. I can't believe this whole thing came down to a Wolverine fight. Like, why? You have the whole universe and it's like Wolverine.
Yeah, but where else was it going to go? And also, there's a bald-faced lie on the last page of this. Bald-faced lie. And I'm projecting into the future and telling you there will become a bald-faced lie.
Yeah.
In memoriam, honoring those who died in Ultimatum. Wolverine. I give you page 13, I'm gonna guess.
Yeah.
And here's the fried up hand of Wolverine with the claws
sticking
down into the lake.
Real twitchy claw.
Right. He's dead. Yeah. He's wicked dead.
Yeah, it's interesting because Wolverine wasn't necessarily the center of the Ultimate X-Men universe or the Ultimate universe.
No.
And I think this is one of the biggest problems with what Jeff Loeb did in both Ultimates number 3 and Ultimatum, is he wrote it as if it was a regular Marvel Universe title, rather than how these characters were in the Ultimate Universe at all. So, yeah.
Also, it was just a big, stupid fight.
At the end. Did anybody ever think this is how Victor Von Doom would go out, dude?
I know, I was like, the thing would never go and squeeze Dr. Yeah. Doom's head. To a, like he rolls up in a car.
Well, also,
and
Dr. Doom
would be cheering?
Yeah.
Would they be in there going,
get it? Cheering. Also, yeah. that Dr. Doom had no plans in case somebody squeezed his head.
Yeah. Like, he's got an anti-head squeezing thing in his helmet.
His last line is actually, oh no, my one weakness.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great.
It's
also,
Grimm that found it.
Found it, yeah. I like, he's got Namor in a big tube. He's like, I'm going to do something with you. Oh, who's at the door? Squeeze. I was like, what? Dr. Doom is way better than that. And what? Once he's like teasing Namor, like,
I understand in a certain sense what this is doing is it's killing off Dr. Doom, it's killing off Magneto, who are the big players in the regular Marvel Universe, so then we don't have them to play with in the Ultimate Universe, so you're forced to come up with new big bads, new interesting things to deal with.
But isn't it going to be more likely B characters being elevated to be like...
Absolutely. Big,
yeah, so that's just as stupid, isn't it?
Nice. So you'd say pick it up, everybody, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you? Well, what did you specifically like about it? Because I think people...
I always wanted to see Ben Grimm pop somebody's head looking great, but the fact that it was Dr. Doom, then, you know, that was reward enough for me.
Yeah. It's. We were talking about this a little bit on our web show, that the thing that does work about it and the thing that works about Jeff Loeb's stuff in general is, like, what's the most ridiculous, over-the-top thing I could possibly do?
Yeah.
And if you take it at that level, it is... The individual sequences and individual panels are fun in and of themselves, mm-hmm. but I don't think... as a whole story, it really works together or is based necessarily in the characters.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean this in the best possible way, it's like a gag reel. It's like an Ultimates gag reel, you know? I mean, how far can we push this in Ultimates' direction?
Wow, look at that.
Yeah. And then we're off to the next thing, because it's got a lot of pace and it zooms, but there's no way we'll bring it from the dead. Does anybody believe that?
Yeah, I do.
I cried all week.
All right, let's move on to talk about Batwoman, Detective Comics number 855, which is the second issue by Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams III. We love the first one. What did you guys think of the second?
Better. Man, this...
What?
So
you can't
so
say better.
It's better. It's there's more color. What?
More color?
More color?
Oh, you're an idiot.
Huh? No, the last book was very, like... Look what you've done.
You know what I'll do is I will go back to the previous issue and color it in for you.
I'm saying the colors are better in this issue. The last one it was simpler. And this there's more color. The panel layout's more complex. It's better because of that.
I totally disagree with you. Like, this is such a slight disagree because I also totally love this issue. It's great. But the way the first issue worked, where for those of you who didn't read it, and shame on you if you didn't, it's showing Batwoman in the dark, so that part is very black and white with splashes of red, and then during the day she's Kate Kane and it's an entirely different
lighter
color palette.
Yeah.
This is taking those two color palettes, those two ideas, and mixing them together at the same time. And I think what I liked more about the first issue was it was so clean and crisp and nice.
Right, yeah. That's your opinion, right?
It's
checking.
I mean, it's by
that's
threat.
A very valid opinion. For an idiot.
Nice one.
Why come we didn't enjoy that as much?
No, it's just not as great.
Yeah.
Pete, what did you think about it?
No, I definitely loved. I mean, I was a little nervous because the first one was so great, and I just like the juxtaposition of seeing a superhero in the day a little bit, and especially in the first issue, like dealing with the duality, which I very much enjoyed. And then this one was a little bit more action packed, which was great. And I liked also. And the first one, it was great because a lot of the panel setups were kind of like, all kind of looked like bat signals and had kind of like wings on them and stuff. And this one had great, like, different perspectives of kind of different events.
It's
so it was
still
cool.
A great issue. Really well done. And it introduced a new villain called Alice, who only uses lines from Alice in Wonderland, which is very cool and completely fits into Batman villains. It feels without ripping it off. That's what I think.
I think it's
really nice, and it actually feels unique and fits right in. It feels like a Batman villain that you're like, oh, why wasn't that there already?
There's a fight sequence in this thing where
what is your problem?
Because the Mad Hatter was was already there. I want there to be a Batman villain that
like,
is not.
Da-da-da, I want to bless children with my hat.
Yeah, no, I like the villain, but
I mean, that's what he says. I don't want to bless children.
No, that's really Andy Rooney moment. I just
deal with these fruits.
I just think, wow.
They're not fresh.
everyone gets an Andy Rooney moment. I just think, like, there are other ways of doing villains than having, like, another...
I cannot think of a single way.
I know. Like, all Batman's, like, circus clowns and this, and I want to see some new villains.
Ben, like what?
Who do you want to see?
Huh?
Who do you want to see?
Something different, something that's not so...
Nice.
I mean,
lawyer,
I don't have
like
any...
bad lawyer?
I don't have
an
any...
An evil lawyer who's out there doing bad things?
We're like,
sure, yeah.
Judicial system?
I want to see something a little bit different. Like, we've seen Batman beat up a clown face 100 times. And we've seen...
this is totally Batwoman, though.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah, add some breasts to things. That's all I'm saying. Add
well, this book is actually full of ass shots, more than breasts, really. If you flip through it and look. Never mind. With,
believe me, I know. There are 17 of them.
It's great. What were you saying tonight?
Oh, I like the thing that I like about the art in this book is the sort of Art Deco vibe to it. It really comes and goes. And I haven't seen the first issue, so now I got to go and look for it because
shame on
me.
It's pretty spectacular, I think. I think we can all agree it's better than this issue. All right, let's move on. Fear Agent number 27, bringing to a close the Eye Against Eye arc. And this is actually, as we find out at the end of this issue, there's one more arc at the end for Fear Agent, and that's pretty much it.
Aww.
Yeah.
This is a great series. This issue, all of the latest arcs have ended with him sort of dying. And this one does, and then he's somehow reanimated. So like,
I love this series, don't get me wrong. Fear Agent, we've been big supporters since the beginning, we've loved it. Talked about it incessantly on the show, almost every issue. He's becoming a little bit like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Or Yosemite Sam, or something like that. He ends, literally, there's a clean hole through his middle, and he's like, ah, at the end of the issue.
Well, plus it's like,
okay. Don't forget the part where he's eating a carrot.
I did forget that.
Yeah. They set up like a happy ending at the end of this, and you're like, uh-oh, something bad's gonna happen. Then all of his loved ones turn into robots and then kill him. So
yeah, and then
classic.
This is the Yosemite Sam, or it's the Wile E. Coyote. This was something more like what would happen to him. But look at this. This is kind of interesting in this book. All right, this is page what 3, and you got 2 panels right here of somebody getting his guts blown out of his back. Okay, mm-hmm. And then here. You get the Fear Agent himself getting booped by the energy beam, and he's got a big hole through his guts. And then at the end of the book, somebody else gets nailed right through the guts.
Oh, wow.
This is a serious recurrent theme. I just was sitting next to Rick Remender in Shining, and I'm surprised I survived it.
does he get a lot of stomach aches?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that might explain it. He's like, oh, get my belly out.
Yeah. Somebody vaporized my intestines.
That was the original title for Fear. Get my belly out. They changed it.
I think that
editors. That's why you have editors, right, guys?
Yes. All right. Let's move on and talk about Fantastic Four number 569, bringing to a close Miller and Hitch's run without Miller and Hitch.
Well, Miller's there.
Kind of. I mean, he wrote the story, but it's plotted out by the guy who's writing Fantastic Force. And Hitch provides the cover, but the inside is by Stuart Immonen.
Yeah. I think since the fans so quickly lost interest in the book, so did they. And they left.
It's a little unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot unfortunate, actually, because I think there was big promise at the beginning of this run. And it's not like... Certainly, we've gone back and forth. We thought there were some pretty terrible issues in there. This is not a terrible issue by any means.
No.
It's certainly, I don't want to say a lot of fun. It's certainly fun.
Yeah. Very fine line.
Yeah, and Stuart Immonen's art is great in here. But it just kind of fizzled out across the board. It's sad.
Well, it's especially, it ended on, so Ben Grimm has been supposed to get married throughout this entire, I don't know, 20 issues or so.
Yeah.
And then it comes to his wedding day. And the marriage fizzles out, just like the book that she's like...
Well, he made a tough decision, which I thought was kind of cool. It was the fact that, like, he realized that not only would it be tough for her, like, he's leaving all the time to go fight crime, and she's got to sit there and be like, will he come back, will he come back? But then he realizes that he's sitting around looking at his friends who've all had loved ones, and they've all lost them. They've all, the ladies die off, and he's like sitting there and was like, well, what about me? Could I deal with that? And the answer was no. So I thought it was a very interesting take on that.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you.
This is a slow clap.
Yeah, I have a...
Yeah,
nice. I have a question for you guys. This is a totally slightly ridiculous thing that I was thinking about while I was reading this issue. And the entire series, with Ben getting married to this girl, I'm reading and I'm like, come on. Ben Grimm could only marry Alicia. That's it. That's the only person he can marry. So, but is that a truism? Is that something that's inherent to the character?
That's what I think. But then the Silver Surfer was with her for a while, if you remember that run back in the day. And I thought that was super weird.
Yeah,
and
he's got no junk.
You know, he can work.
He really grows.
He works it.
What?
He's got a rover or something.
Yeah. That's what the cosmic force is. Yeah. It's junk growing.
This got weird fast.
I agree with you. That's why this whole thing, I was like, who's this girl? That he should be with her because it makes sense because she's blind and she works the clock all the time. So they're a perfect match. This girl can see and doesn't have, she's like a teacher.
Teachers
can't.
Anyway, would you say pick it up?
Nope.
Not really. If you haven't been following it, it just closes the everything that Miller Hinch did.
Yeah, and essentially it clears the
and now
for
it's
the Hickman Dale Eaglesham run, which I'm actually pretty excited about.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's move on to talk about Justice Society of America, number 29. This is actually the beginning of a new team. Bill Willingham, Matt Sturges Fables, Jack Phillip, Fables taking it over. What do you guys think?
Well, they decided to create an evil dark egg for their first...
think about it.
Yeah.
What's going to come out of that?
I don't know, but it's already starting to mind control people. I don't know, I feel like I was really excited for them for this, and I love the art. I thought there were some great moments in between, but I just felt like it was really just moving people and being like, okay, I need all these people over here, and I just need two people here, so then we can kill them, Nobody saw it coming. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's their first issue, so they have to... I mean, by moving people, you mean, like, where everyone had to go fight.
Well, it's like, oh, there's one bad guy. Everybody, let's go! Why are we all going? I don't know! We'll find out when we get there. Oh, it's because we said something planned back here, and we only needed two people back at the... What?
Yeah, you've got... Well, that's just the way it works sometimes in a superhero team.
Oh.
Sometimes people stay back.
Yeah. I cannot imagine how hard it must be to write JSA, because
there's
what,
so
like, 365 people on the team?
One every day.
I'm Tuesday the 1st.
Anyway, the biggest problem with this for me, and I think it's a fine, solid issue, is that Sturges and Willingham tend to be very stilted in their dialogue, and that works really well for me in Fables, because it's a little more storybook. Here, where it's, you know, hardcore superhero fisticuffs, not quite so
well,
much.
I feel like all the characters, none of the characters have their own voice yet. I think they'll find that time. Plus, the book is splitting off into two teams. The teams are splitting up a little bit in the future. So I think that'll help a lot to kind of give them...
Man, what if, like, Sturges' book ends up being better than Willingham's book?
Oh, man.
They're going to have a big fight.
Yeah. They're not, like, married or anything.
They're married. That's how it works. When two people work on a book, they get married.
Really?
So marriage is...
Alex, I'm not working with you.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Break up!
I want that. All right. What would you say?
I like it's going to be a good run, I think, and Pete's wrong.
All right, let's move on and talk about something Pete may or may not be wrong about. The Stuff of Legend, number one.
Yeah.
Pete, you love the series. Want to give people a little wrap-up of what is...
Well, is it a series or a children's book? It's just something I would like to pose. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, it's the artwork is fantastic. It's a fun kind of idea of here's a kid and his toys,
right?
And basically what happens.
So it's like a story about the toys or a toy story. What happened?
No, I was starting to talk about it, but you had to interrupt me to be a douchebag.
I rarely lack unless I'm marching in a marching band, which I do on the weekends. In this book, a kid has a bunch of toys, and when he leaves, they all come alive. And they're like, what are we going to do? We got to go get our guy back. We have to save the day. And then Buzz Lightyear comes in, and he's like, well, I think we should do this. And then Woody gets up, and he's like, I'm going to lasso some help from us. And then a piggy bank is like, don't take my money out. That's about right, right?
Yeah, you don't have a
heart. I broke him.
You don't have a heart.
That's
basically,
true.
That is the first half of the book. The
no,
first
it's
half
not.
Of the
you tell me how it's different. You tell me how it's
fucking
different.
Fucking Woody is not in it or the other guy.
Fucking Woody.
Get him, Pete. It's a lot darker than Toy Story, first off. And there are some interesting issues that's brought
it's
up.
It's like Dark Rain, Toy Story.
Yeah. I played a bunch of Randy Newman songs and they synced up to this book.
Just like Toy Story.
Whatever the first half of the book
is. I don't like Randy Newman, let me just say it. That was just a joke. So sure.
Thanks for clearing me up. Second half of the book, basically a kid who owns all these toys gets sucked into a closet by the boogeyman. Ooh. The toys head into the closet to go find him and rescue them. Yeah. Second half of the book is a little more of a war comic involving toys who now look semi-real. Hmm. First half of the book is Toy Story, though.
Yeah. And the second half is the movie Toys with Robin. So it's a great mashup.
Yeah.
I mean, the third
half is The Toy with Richard Pryor.
Yeah! Wow. That's a good one. Or was John Leguizamo? Is that
The Pest.
You're
welcome.
That doesn't fit.
Yeah. Would you say pick it up?
Yes.
So
it's amazing.
All fun aside, it's a pretty good read.
Yeah, it's good. It's a really good start. Very well done, very good art. Definitely recommend picking it up. Or just rent Toy Story, either way.
Yeah.
Dark Reign Hawkeye, number four. Pete, you're a big fan of this as well.
Yes, Andy Diggle is doing some fantastic work with Bullseye / Hawkeye. It's this cool kind of twist where Bullseye thought he was going crazy, but it turns out he just has an asshole dead, which happens a lot.
Yeah. That's true.
For those of you who have been reading the series or paying attention to the Marvel Universe, I guess, here, I'm going to start at the beginning. Okay, so there was, what was the first issue? Amazing Fantasy number 15. Yeah. Okay, so we'll start there and then we'll work up to Dark Reign.
Dark Reign.
Yeah.
It was the logical progression from Amazing Fantasy to this.
Bullseye is essentially dressing up as Hawkeye. This has been exploring that duality there of I'm dressing up as a hero, but I'm really this murderous guy who likes to kill people all the time, immorally. But it turns out, his father's a dick. Yeah.
If you look,
he said it's shorter and sweeter.
If you look through Amazing Fantasy 15, you can see Dark Reign Hawkeye in one of the panels.
It's pretty
little,
crazy.
It's a little known fact. He's like...
it's a big panel.
It's
entire. It's a full page splash. Stanley was like, I guess there's a full page splash of Dark Reign Hawkeye.
That was one of those crazy ideas they had to make true. I actually like this book a lot as well. Yeah. It's pretty good. I think it's crazy. There are so many of these Dark Reign Little Limited series, and they're all like good, but there are so many that it becomes a wash of like, who's reading all these?
We are.
I know. I know.
All right, cool. And that's it for the stack.
Yeah.
All right. It is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to bring up Booth Man.
Vocal Booth Man tonight.
Hey.
Thanks for the Nine Inch Nails. Thanks for the Nine Inch Nails warm up music.
It's not collectible anymore.
No.
Sorry.
No.
Easy.
I'm so happy a Finnegan's Wake joke was made tonight.
Yeah.
All right.
That's weird.
Is the nature of the superhero inherently fascist?
Ooh.
My?
Wow.
My.
All right, let's
Let's
start with define fascism, I guess.
Right,
let's
okay.
really talk about the roots of fascism.
Fascism is the aestheticization of state power.
Oh, all right.
You guys know what the term means?
The answer is no.
Yeah, so I guess probably not.
Unless the government controls superheroes.
Right.
Well, this is the thing. That's where.
Yeah.
It's,
No, go ahead.
Oh, I'll go ahead then.
You're the guest.
Inherently, no. But there is I think that with a lot of superheroes,
closed, there is a tendency to let their superhero-ness let the reader stop asking real questions about, you know, what do you do when there is a real problem that might destroy the world? And, you know, what if we don't have the Fantastic Four to handle it? Those questions all get thrown out the window if we do have the Fantastic Four to handle it, or whoever else. And that becomes a way of, can become a way of subliminally saying, we will let the existing structures of power take care of this thing in their unquestioned way. And so in that way, the superhero can be a conduit for a sort of latent impulse toward fascism. But I don't think he has to be.
Would we care to elaborate?
I'd like to add, I like Superman.
Yeah. And Nazis bad.
No, I mean, I think it's, a lot of stories take that as their natural conclusion, that if it gets pushed too far, it ends up in fascism. But I think the whole point of those stories is if it gets pushed too far. Mm-hmm. So to me, that means no, they are not inherently.
And the best comics, I think, can see that structure a little bit and play kind of in and out of it so that you don't have to, it's not a stopping your thinking, it's kind of looking at both sides at the same time.
But it's interesting how it always seems to get there sooner or later, right?
Right.
And so that does make you wonder whether there is something about the trope of the superhero, the Superman, that sort of encourages people to be led.
Well, anytime you give up power to something else, isn't that kind of that? Anytime you're giving, you're like, someone else will handle it. I'll just not think about it.
That's laziness.
Huh? Well, I think there are certain things in superhero comics. This is tough, and this comes up in any conversation we have about almost anything with superhero comics, that as a reader, we kind of have to assume. You know, and again, the idea does get played with that, like, because Superman is there, Lex Luthor takes this, you know, tact, and he says, oh, because Superman's there, we never... the people of Metropolis never help themselves, they never push themselves forward.
Yeah.
But as a reader, I think we're supposed to assume that Lex Luthor is wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That,
I think
that
we,
people do essentially help themselves.
I love, though, when that becomes his central idea of why, the central reason why he's evil, is that where it's like, he's like saying, like, no, guys, Superman's bad because this. Like, he's not evil, he's like raising a valid point. Superman, that, those are the best stories, Superman stories for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and how many supervillains throughout the history of comic books have called the hoi polloi in whatever town they're in some variation on sheep or dupes or something like that? I mean, the entire architecture of the superhero supervillain story is a sort of an allegory about fascism, you know? And so it's real easy for those stories to fall into a kind of fascistic love of power. You know, there's a reason why when all else fails, everybody just beats the shit out of the bad guy, right? Because that's easier than working out the problem. You know, you just stomp the fuck out of the guy, and then the conversation's over. And so,
a normal way to solve your problem.
I do it all the time.
I think we should have a series called "Working Out Your Problems" comics.
Yeah,
and it's just people sitting around tables and like superheroes fight, and they're like, "You, we got to talk about this."
Yeah,
we're taking this to mediation, dude.
Yeah. I'm going to crush your ideas with my ideas.
Raise your hand if you ask that piece, can bring you a gift, and let's get the next question.
If the Daredevil film was rebooted, who would be the best for the part of Matt Murdock?
Alex, any ideas?
You would.
Matt Damon.
I'll do it.
Matt Damon. It's like a Ben versus
Jack Pierce.
Oh, that'd be endless strife between them. They'd be arguing for the rest of their lives about whose movie was better.
Who was it? What was that?
I said Guy Pierce.
Ah, yeah.
Guy Pierce would be good.
Who's a little like Alex?
Yeah.
What?
A little bit. Looks a little like Alex a little bit.
Stop it.
That's what
smooth
I said.
Talker.
Yeah.
I don't know. who's blind in Hollywood? That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
People don't act.
Yeah.
Okay.
Blind to their own vanity.
Oh. Yeah,
think about that.
Oh.
That is Seth Green. He's got red hair. It's one of the qualities of
hair. Christina Hendricks from Mad Men. She also has red hair.
Let's see if we'll screen test them both.
Let's have them come in here. We'll fight for the part. And then
see who's
one
got
of
the
them will be like, we can't make
a true actor can assume any role.
Cool. I'm glad we answered that question.
I'm a classically trained actor. I should.
You should play Daredevil.
I didn't want to say it myself.
You had to keep going with it.
I just had to keep the conversation. Just to bring up bad ideas, if someone has a good one.
Raise your hand if you ask that Pete's gonna bring you a gift. Let's get the next question.
Right. Oh, that was another really slow clap.
No, that was really fast. That was like.
Wolverine versus Superman in a debate.
A real heady crowd tonight. In a debate. Interesting. Wolverine's lived a long time.
Yeah, exactly. What topic?
So is Superman, and I think Superman benefited from a better public education.
Agreed.
Because Wolverine was sort of on
his own. Oh, no, he's got street knowledge.
So you're saying, yeah.
But that doesn't get you anywhere in a debate. In a debate,
depending on what they're debating.
The rules of logic and debate. I'm going to say Superman wipes him out.
What you guys don't know is the topic of the debate is what bar is best for finding clues.
And he's good at that. He can find any clue. Especially when it's like a bleeding hand. Superman might like overlook that public education shit.
No, I think with the solid education that he got, and also, you know, he's an alien and they're smarter than we are. So
interesting.
It goes without saying, right?
Well, Wolverine's never been a great public speaker.
This is the thing. I don't think Wolverine would handle himself particularly well in a debate.
Yeah.
Because he would just freak out and start slashing everybody to ribbons.
Which means he won.
Oh, pizza fascist. Never bring that up.
Raise your hand if you ask that piece to bring a gift. That's it for your audience questions.
Woo! Yeah.
All right. It is time for our next section, which is called Week in Geek.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah.
Nice. So, a couple of things that we're going to talk about at Week in Geek. First thing we're going to talk about. Pete, these are both for you. You picked the stack this week. You picked the topics this week. First thing you wanted to talk about.
Let's roll it! Come on, motherfuckers!
Let me introduce him first. Pete was like, hey, I want to talk. I want to show the Black Panther trailer. And I was like, what Black Panther trailer? And he's like, the one that just came out. And I looked for it because I couldn't remember that there was a new one released, and there wasn't. Yeah. There was one released 8 months ago.
Yeah.
And
the new
one.
For the
so
cartoon.
Saying, Pete, do you want to show it? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. We really got to talk about it. So
certainly.
Here you go. Trailer for Black Panther.
Ooh.
Right.
All right. Woo!
It looks good.
It's coming with me.
I mean, it's kind of like a bold reinvention.
It is, really. I don't know how anyone's going to be able to find it in their TV listings. This is going under the name Photo Search. It's going to be harder for people.
Well, that's the name. It's Black Panther. Photo Search.
Yes.
Big misunderstanding. What's that?
Pete, you did want to talk about the fact that this has been taking... There actually is Black Panther.
Yes, yeah, taking forever.
And the cartoon supposed to be coming out on BET. They announced it back in November. What do you want to talk about?
I saw the trailer that was released, and I was happy about the animation because a lot of times when you get a cartoon, you kind of lose a little bit of the comic book feel, but it's got that, it's almost like an animated comic book, if that makes sense.
A motion comic, if you will?
Yes, if you will.
Or like a cartoon.
So a cartoon.
Yeah.
But no, still having kind of like stiller back... Oh, fuck me.
Sense. Yeah, no.
Should we roll it again?
Yeah.
Let's see what
this
movie's talking about. Yeah, it is.
That was cool because the background was black.
Yeah.
All the time. It's the one panel that doesn't really change.
None of the Panther's feet moved, did it?
Yeah,
it's like a comic.
Real quiet.
It's really cool.
Really chilling.
You get to use your imagination.
It's really chilling.
I am sorry, Pete. I apologize about the Black Panther thing. I feel bad. The next topic that we are going to talk about...
Come on! Let's do it! Hurry up!
As we mentioned at the top of the show...
His enthusiasm was not squelched.
G.I. Joe is coming out this week. Pete really actually has literally every single show when I say, hey, what should we do for the Week in Geek? He says, show the G.I. Joe trailer.
Let's fire it up!
you can't do the G.I. Joe trailer. Come on, this is ridiculous. It came out weeks ago. And he's like, no, let's show it. I think it's really important.
Yeah.
So, really as a gift to you on the opening week of G.I. Joe, here is the trailer.
Yeah!
Alright, pump that bottle. Next slide, next slide.
That's, that was Storm Shadow, right?
I want the warheads ready to go. When I'm finished, this world will never forget. We have never faced a threat like this. The team has been they are the best operatives in the world. When all else fails, we don't.
I want it.
Standing in front of you, a Delta 6 accelerator system.
What's it accelerate?
You.
But what we did when we were kids and we did stuff like this is that's when you get out, if your dad leaves a gas can in the garage, and you get out the gas can and the 6 or 8 packs of Black Cats that you got the last time you went to Florida. And that's when you seriously lay waste to your Army men and to all your toys. Yeah, I sunk the Bismarck one time in a mud puddle. And it was outstanding. I had a Bismarck about yay big, Battleship Bismarck. I broke off one barrel of one gun turret right after I finished it, and I was so furious that it had just rained. And so I went out and I poured about a half an inch of gas in the bottom of the Bismarck and shook it around a little bit. And then stuck a firecracker in a hole in the deck and just lit it and ran. And man, it went off. It was something else. Ooh, in the puddle. It like blew the puddle out of the puddle. And, so.
Memoir title?
What's that?
Memoir title, perhaps.
Pull the puddle out of the puddle? Yeah. Hold on a second. And that's what I think needed to happen there. They didn't really go for it.
Yeah, I know. Bullshit.
Cool. Check out G.I. Joe this Friday, and that's it for the week in Geek.
I didn't mean to step on your trailer there, man.
Yeah.
It's all right. It was funny, though, because my best friend girl broke his collarbone, and we made something like that where it was like, we had the fishing line, and it was like, put the
attached
missiles on
his collarbone?
Yeah. No. It was just,
you
two of the action figures. No.
Oh, okay.
Did you set anything on fire?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, we used that maybes and stuff like that, but like, whenever
we didn't you attach one to a Buzz Lightyear, and he was like, no, that's style. I got it.
Cool, it is time for trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Angry with a Page.
Yeah! All right, this is trivia, and it's an opportunity for you, the lovely audience, thank you so much for coming, to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance to win $25 free? Yes, first stand up, guys. Come on down. All right.
Chrisman.
Chris, audience, Chris.
So here's a possible gift card for you. Okay, how this is gonna work? You're gonna listen to each question, then all three possible answers, go 3 for 3, gift card yours. Okay, so today's trivia is on Daredevil Noir. Same, pay attention, don't worry about it. All right, here we go. So, question number one, thank you, Boothman. In Daredevil Noir, Matt Murdock doesn't work in law. He works in... He is actually... Is it A, a cop, B, a performer, or C, a cosplayer? So he's either A, a cop, not the correct answer, or he is B, a performer.
B, a performer.
All right! 1 for 1. Here we go. Question number 2. In Daredevil Noir, there is a Bullseye-type character. What is the name of that character? Is it A, the Bullseye Killer, B, Target, or is it C, Bad Guy? So it's either A, which is the correct choice, the Bullseye Killer, or it is B, Target.
I want to go with C.
No.
A.
A is correct! Woo! I got a little nervous. All right, 2 for 2. Don't get cocky. Focus up.
Foggy!
In Daredevil Noir, seems to be A, similar to the real Foggy that we know, B, taller, or is it C, more dreamy? So it's probably A, similar.
Hey, Carol, we come.
Yeah.
A is correct! Yeah. 3 for 3! There you go, $25 free. Enjoy.
Great. Yeah, that's great. Another great round.
Good job.
I can't believe
thanks.
He got it.
Yeah.
So this was the hardest trivia you have ever done.
So what do you wait for? Should they have to just repeat what you say?
Nice. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Hack Slash. It's a fantastic comic.
Okay.
Do you know something we don't?
Yeah, you're really
right. No.
All right.
I just really like the comic.
Cool, man.
What is going on?
Really cool. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Red Circle, the Hangman from DC. They're bringing back the old Impact Comics line of characters.
Oh, that's really cool. They're going to sell one copy.
Well, the old JT. I know, Red Circle, the Hangman's had a great title.
I've never heard of that.
But I love those characters back in the Impact line. And,
yeah. Is it JMS?
JMS is doing what's writing it, so right. It's probably going
to
be good.
All right, 2 copies. I'm really looking forward to Ghost Riders, Heavens on Fire, #1.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron has been writing the crap out of the Ghost Rider series. I have never liked Ghost Rider, ever, until Jason Aaron has started writing it, and it is so much fun.
Yeah.
Also, read this issue, and it's great.
Yeah,
I can't wait to read it again. What are you looking forward to, Alex?
That one is, I won't pick that one because you did, but I've been enjoying Aaron's stuff on Ghost Rider, too. I'm going to go, because I'm a huge fan of Phil Dick, and I'm really curious what this Duandre's Dream of Electric Sheep comic looks like.
Yeah.
And I missed the first one, so I'm going to have to go and...
I heard really good things about it.
Yeah, it's a terrific novel and was turned into an utterly different but also terrific movie. So now I'm curious to see what the comic looks like.
I'm curious to check out these novels.
I'm gonna try it.
Just once, you won't go back.
There are these cafes that have books
your own.
Plug some stuff of my own, my goodness. We'll talk about Bayad a little bit, and I got a another story that is percolating over at Marvel that may or may not have something to do with a movie that comes out next summer.
Any movie? Time Trap? Oh, it's this summer.
what else I got going on? I'm writing a Star Wars novel, which is kind of fun.
Hey, whoa.
That's
this is going to get real nerdy real quick.
Oh, bring it.
Which continuity?
Old Republic, dude.
Yeah! Oh my god!
tried so hard.
Yeah, I know, cool.
If you're ever curious what happens to Nomi and Vina Sunrider, you're going to find out in this book.
Ooh.
Huh?
I mean, I don't know.
Anybody, yeah.
So apparently people out there are.
Yeah.
At least some of them. And so, yeah, we talked about lots of different stories with the folks at Lucasfilm who were fun. And this was the one we settled on, so I'm doing that. What the hell else is going on? I don't know. I'm working on a screenplay of Bio. Because this guy in LA keeps calling me and asking me to do it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Great.
Long awesome. Story short, that's
you write and play too.
What's that?
You write and play too.
Yeah. Actually, yes. Yes, I do.
I just gotta say yes to anything.
No, it's yeah. It's,
are you making a new flavor of cat?
No, my wife makes spinach ice cream.
Oh, see, you got it all.
I got it all. No, it's I am actually tinkering with the play because that's what originally got me into writing, because I was an actor for a while and then I was like, well, this writing thing looks like fun, and I wrote a play. Man, did it suck! But I kept writing, and so then I wrote fiction mostly for a long time, comics and this and that. So yeah,
cool,
great,
awesome. A couple of things before we go. You can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. Also, before we go, we want to thank Alex for being on the show. First of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thank you,
everybody. Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, it was a great time. Thanks.
Good. Whatever time you're looking
from? We do, yeah, actually. We're going to the local bar.